Listen to the Vibes.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Listen to the Vibes. And I'm very privileged to have Ms. Sherry Hersey here, and we are going to have a great conversation. And before we kick that off, I want to know a little bit about you. So tell us about the great Sherry.
Wow, let's see. I've been in the entertainment industry for a very long time. We could say going on four decades. Hard to believe. Been a member of Screen Actors Guild and Equity and AFTRA and all of them doing professional theater, television, movies since I was 18. And I think you probably, some of my bigger claims to fame are Home Improvement, the series with Tim Allen. I played Al's girlfriend, Eileen. In the movie Bring It On, which surprised me, was such a huge blockbuster. I play Kirsten Dunst's mom in the movie. I've done maybe 12 or more TV movies that I've starred in and other series. I was on Days of Our Lives for a couple of years. My husband and I laugh because every time we turn on the TV at night, when I sit down and watch something, he'll peruse through first and put my name in. And just like two nights ago, all these things that I was in, you know, in the late 80s and early 90s are now on, you know, they've been digitized and they're airing like Riptide and Tour of Duty. And some of them I'd never even seen because I didn't always watch myself when I was on something. So the other night we watched for the first time me on an episode of Tour of Duty, which was a series, I think, in the late 80s, early 90s. And I played this reporter. They straightened my hair and I had false eyelashes on. And I'm playing this 1968 reporter in Vietnam. It's pretty hilarious. So, yeah, I go back. I've had some amazing, amazing experiences as an actress. I was on Mary Tyler Moore, played Murray's daughter. Happy Days,
one of my favorites.
Happy Days, I played Winnie McKinney, the other Richie Cunningham episode. Just a lot of all the MTM shows. Rhoda, I played Chatty, this Chatty Patty girl that worked with Melanie Mayron and Julie Kavner on Rhoda. Loved Valerie Harper to death. She was just the most precious human being.
Oh, yeah.
Several movies that I've done that I've been really proud of. And most recently, I would say that in the 90s, at the top of my game, as some people would say, I sort of asked God, what's mine to do? I'm sort of made it, as they would say. I'm on the number one series on television. Is this it? Is this all I'm here to do? And I really had some life-changing events occur shortly after that. And I ended up, I love children, and I love music, and I'm probably first and foremost a vocalist, so I've done a lot of singing in movies and voice acting in movies. I've done, believe it or not, over 200 movies of voice work. I work with a group called the LA Mad Dogs, and we sweeten films and television series, so I got to do things like Shrek. I got to be the when the bird with that voice. Madagascar, I like to move it. I've done Trolls. I've done all kinds of different singing characters. And then I produced a pilot for PBS called Lily's Light. And that turned into a feature film that was released last year. And it is currently airing right now on Amazon Prime, Lily's Light, the movie, where I play the keeper of an enchanted lighthouse and the foster mom to a melting pot of kids. And that became a passion of mine, to advocate for fostering and adoption. Mm. I came from a family that was very broken, and I had a foster sister. And she was, and still is, one of the closest people to me in my life. and this issue we have in our world of especially kids who are considered unadoptable and older and have a really hard time finding forever families and end up on the streets is something that I'm passionate about. And I work with a lot of other nonprofits. I started a nonprofit in that direction called Lily's Fostering Hearts. And so Lily's Light, the movie, advocates for Lily's Fostering Hearts. And I do And during the course of producing and writing Lily's Light and starring in Lily's Light, the movie, along with my husband, Rick Cowling, who's an amazingly talented musician, and we wrote a lot of songs for the movie. Along with that, we developed our own production company, Turning on the Light Entertainment, and we're committed to producing uplifting content and positive music and affirmative conscious media, is what I like to call it, something that gives people a choice of what to put in their head, because I am a firm believer that what we hold in our consciousness is what we outpicture in our lives.
Oh, that's right.
And I know it to be so true. And that alone, that path, was sort of sparked in some of my darkest hours when I was younger and knew that I could end up in a very self-destructive path if I didn't get help. So mm-hmm. I got help in my teenage years, and also aside from getting, you know, some great therapists to help me, I also walked into a Unity Church, Unity by the Sea, which is a sort of a progressive, practical Christian path, very metaphysical in nature, and that really helped me. I felt very supported. And I've been sort of following Unity teaching and studying it and practicing the tools my entire life. And it has really helped me awaken to a lot of truth and truth principles that have given me so much in my life. And I'm now on a ministry path, which is pretty interesting.
That's pretty cool. So you're going to be able to do weddings and everything?
Yeah, you know, years ago, I actually did that, signed up for, a friend of mine wanted me to do I think it was a christening. And so I did the sign up online to get your certification so that you could do that kind of thing. So I could officially do that anyway. But what being a Unity minister for me is more the icing on the cake. I really didn't plan this path to unfold, but because of COVID and being the music and audiovisual director at my spiritual center in Thousand Oaks, I was producing the weekly content for us, and my husband and I were producing 3 and 4 music videos a week. Wow. Which is a lot of work all around our neighborhood and everywhere. I just actually started, I thought, well, you know, I don't even have a YouTube channel, so I just started Sherry Hersey YouTube channel. And I'm sharing some of the music videos and some of my acting clips from way back. Some of them are online, so I'm just putting them in a playlist, and some of them I'm uploading myself. So if anybody wants to, like, see me in the old days, you can check that out.
See, you were on one of my favorite shows of all time, The Person I Wanted to Be When I Grew Up, and you didn't mention The $6 Million Man.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I wanted to be Steve Austin so bad.
All right, Steve Austin. You know, that was such an important moment for me. I did this 2-part episode, and actually it's on, I think, NBC Universal. Mm-hmm. You can get it right now. And I think we finally either downloaded it or captured it so I could have it, because I have this big case downstairs, an entire trunk of my VHS episodes of everything I've ever done. So as they appear on TV now, and you can see them, and they're in much better, you know, they're HD, and they've transferred them, and they look great. We're capturing them so I can keep them. But that was a funny one. I was very young, 2-part episode, and we did it in Cape Canaveral.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I was captured, tied up. Steve Austin had to rescue me. And what I thought was really funny, it was one of my earlier acting gigs. And the thing that really was so funny for me is that he would go home because he was there every day. So they would let him do his close-ups first and then go home so they didn't burn him out, you know, because he was having to work every single day. Right. So by the time it came to my, here I am, 18 years old, there it's time for my close-up, and I'm expecting to do it with you know, Lee Majors. And he goes home, and they're like, okay, we're ready for your close-up now. And I'm like, well, where's the actor? Where's Lee Majors? And they're like, oh, we sent him home. And I'm like, well, who am I supposed to be doing this with?
Oh, no.
It was was my first real life experience of, you're making this all up right now, and you're going to be looking over here and looking over here, and the director's going to point, and you're going to react, and there's nothing going on. It's you creating it. I was at first kind of disillusioned. I thought, I'm going back to theater. This is not fun.
Man, that I would have been heartbroken.
I was heartbroken. I really was. But he was really sweet to me, and I have had an amazing career, and it ain't over yet. So, and knowing that my movie's out right now, and that it's gotten almost 5 stars, like 4.5 stars on Amazon, and it's on PureFlix, for anybody who has that subscription. And the Dove Foundation gave us really great reviews and really high marks too, and that meant a lot to me. So, yeah, I'm super happy about what we're doing.
I'm comedian David Race in Los Angeles. I host a celebrity-filled paranormal talk show like no other. Monstrosity has great guests answering weird questions. You won't believe the combo of celebrities and paranormal experts who've been on this show. I guarantee you'll like Monstrosity, or you get your time back. Go to monstrositypodcast.com right now and take a look.
That's, you know, to advocate for something that a lot of people really don't think about day to day. You have to make folks aware. I told you before we started, I have 2 kids that are, they're not mine by blood, but I don't call them my stepkids. They're my bonus kids. And I love them as if they were my own. And that makes a difference in their lives. Yes. Because they weren't used to getting that same love that they and attention they need. And I've got 3 other kids, and then I've got my grandkids. You spread that love around, because there's plenty of it to go around. And now we're like I've got that family unit that I've wanted for so long, because all of us would get together at the holidays, and I really miss it, because my parents, well, my dad passed away, my mom's getting older, my grandmother and grandfather passed away, and most of the family have gone their separate ways. Go out there and find some kid that needs some love and attention like that and give it to them.
Absolutely. And it's never too late. And it doesn't, because there are a lot of stories, really beautiful success stories of older single people and older couples fostering a child in their late teens, just to give them the opportunity to have family when they go off to college, to have someone to come home to make that transition. Some people have even waited. There was a beautiful story I just read about a social worker who had been an advocate for a child since she was 11 years old. But because she was this child's appointed advocate, she could not legally adopt her. It was a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. So they formed a bond. And the young girl ended up calling her mom just out of respect. And when she turned 19, when she aged out of the system, she was adopted by this woman.
Oh.
And there are so many stories of people who are older, who've adopted older kids. And that's what I'm, where my heart is right now. I have bonus children as well.
Oh. And you know, I'm up for foster care too, if you...
Well, I will tell you, I've actually got a house full of adults. Like, my friends laugh at me right now because I foster older adult, you know, older kids. I have a friend that comes and camps out in my house in his RV and lives here half the time. Right now I have another gentleman who's staying. He's from my spiritual community, and he's making a transition from retiring to moving to a new home that he bought in St. George, Utah. So he's staying, you know, with me and my husband temporarily. And that's what they say. You adopt older people. But my youngest daughter just moved out a couple of months ago. And I just said to Rick, I said, it's time now. We bought this house up here this beautiful place, to have our own studio downstairs, to be close to our spiritual center, to have, you know, it be a sanctuary. We have World Day of Prayer here. We've had concerts on our balcony, and we have room. And I said, it's time. It's time for us to foster, to adopt a teenager or two and give them that, because that's really where the need is. All the very young children usually get adopted pretty quickly. When people, young couples are looking for children and they want younger kids usually. But it's the middle, you know, the 10 to 19 age that doesn't usually find forever homes and can be moved around. And it's a real challenge for us.
Yeah, some of us kids in our 50s can't find a home either.
You're welcome to my home. I really like you, Kyle. We have a lot in common.
Well, you know, that's something I didn't mention is, you know, a lot of the younger kids, they are able to find homes. It's the older kids that can't find a place. And
yes,
they need love, too.
That's what the story in Lily's Light is about. It's about a 14-year-old boy who loses his only living relative, and he wants to run away with his pig, his potbelly pig, and he's at the lighthouse, and we take him on an adventure. The lighthouse has the ability to illuminate our imagination, and so the story seed can be developed in the adventure section, where we go up to the top of the lighthouse and say, I am the light that shines on me, illuminate the world I see. And then we go into a make-believe imaginary adventure that sort of gives them the tool they need to help them in life. One time I produced a little series here in Thousand Oaks and also in Florida called Contagious Optimism Live with a man who wrote the book Contagious Optimism, David Mezepel. And it was all about very positive, motivational people speaking and posse artists singing affirmative songs. And we talked to a lot of older people, one of the books that David had written, and David and I went and talked to a lot of seniors about what's the most important thing in their lives. What do they look back on? What do they remember? And hands down, there wasn't one person who talked about what they had accomplished in life. They talked about who they loved and who loved them. And that was it across the board. And even my grandfather, Grandfather Hersey, who lived to be 98 years old, I remember him saying to me, you know, his wife had died 30 years younger. And he had said to me, if I had only known, I'd have spent more time with my sweetheart. And that was all that he could think about. It didn't matter that he had a very successful pharmacy and another business over here and anything like that. It wasn't, and we get so caught up in thinking that these things outside are going to make us happy. Fortunately for me, I had the gift of getting to what I thought was the top, so to speak, and saying, okay, this is it. You know, this isn't going to bring me everything. And it doesn't. It doesn't matter how successful you get. That's not where happiness is. I don't have anything against success. And I think if you've got a vision and you're motivated, you can do it all. And we can have it all. I believe that. I really do. But it's all about why and what you're doing it for. You're right. You know, if it's because I would do the same thing. I'm really, if I could put a blanket of love and nurturing around every child that needs a home or a mom, I would do it, you know?
We had been talking before we got started. You sang with Ambrosia.
Oh, well, my husband. Yeah, that was just for fun. I did one gig with them. That's not my claim to fame, but I love them all. They're so great. Joe Puerta, who is, and Burley Drummond, two of the original Ambrosia members. My husband, Rick Cowling, took over for David Pack and sang lead for them for years. He's actually the one that did the Jimmy Fallon show with Ambrosia. He's the one singing lead. He's a phenomenal singer and musician. And he has his own band here in Los Angeles, and we sing together every Sunday, by the way. Oh, and we write music together. But he still goes out with Ambrosia once in a while. Mostly he works with Kenny Loggins now. and he either plays guitar, bass, or keys for Kenny. And this is probably Kenny's last year, so it's been a lot of fun. Kenny's invited me to go along on a lot of the gigs so that I don't have to be apart from Rick, and he's been very generous to us. He actually, we used Heartlight, which I had always wanted to use in Lily's Light. We used Kenny Loggins' song Heartlight. I don't know if you're familiar with that one, like a beacon in the welcome to Heartlight. Yeah, we used that as the outro song in Lily's Light, the movie. And Kenny gave us a lot of tips. Rick and I sang our own version of it, and then Kenny sang backup for us.
Oh, cool.
And he shows up as a cameo at the end of the movie. He videotaped himself so he could be in it. I also had something really interesting happen. Wow. 2 years ago, during the middle of COVID, I did my DNA test, you know, 23andMe.
Mm-hmm.
And discovered that I had a sister I didn't know about.
Really?
Yes. So I have since met her. She looks just, we look so much alike. It's ridiculous. And, it's been amazing. So I went to visit her. She lives in South Carolina, where I was originally from. And we've like long lost, you know, sisters that were both estranged from our father and the rest of our family. So we have a lot in common. And the way we discovered it was really special. It was her daughter that was on 23andMe. And she kept coming up as my first cousin, but with more DNA than a first cousin. And I was like, well, I asked all my family members, who is this cousin? And nobody knew who it was. And then she came up as my great niece. And I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense. I don't have anybody. And then I thought, my half-sister, who lives in Texas, her son did it. And he came up as my great nephew. So then I went, oh, I have another sibling somewhere. And we reached out and my biological sister and I reached out to the daughter because the same thing happened. She had her come up as a great niece. We reached out and we talked and talked and tried to figure out how we could be related. And finally the girl said, you know what? I think that my mom is your sister because she looks just like Sherry.
Wow.
And we ended up finding out that was true. So,
any plans to move back out that way?
You know, we just moved right before COVID. We bought the house we live in currently in Moore Park in the hills, and we looked around the periphery of Los Angeles because we were just sort of tired of being right in the middle of the city.
Yeah.
And I wasn't having to run around on interviews as much as I used to, and I'd started producing on my own, and I was using my little house in the San Fernando Valley as our production office. And people were coming in and out all the time. And even though it was centrally located, it just didn't give us any privacy. So we started looking for a big enough place to house our production company. And we bought a rather big property and a big house. It was gutted. And so we built it from 2018 to 2019. We built it so we could live in it. Sold my other home, moved here. And we've been, and then during COVID, we were in full production most of the time because the industry shut down. Rick wasn't touring. No, he wasn't working. I wasn't really working much. So we started producing videos and making music videos for all kinds of spiritual centers all over. We were supplying music videos for Unity Center New York and Chattanooga and all over the place. So
what do you prefer, in front of the camera or behind the camera?
That's tough. I like both, but what I liked the most in front of the camera was being on a series or being on a movie that I was there every day. Because coming from theater background, it's the teamwork and the community of working together. I never really liked so much the aspect of acting where I got a guest star part and I have to show up and just do my thing and then leave and I don't get to know everybody. But it was really important for me to be able to be a part of the crew all the time. And if I'm there from the morning until, you know, the end of the day and I'm part of the crew and I know everybody, then it feels like theater to me. You know, it feels like family. So that's what I like the most. And being a producer, you have that same feeling. And I didn't realize until Lily's Light that I was a writer at heart. And so that's been kind of exciting. I also, when I found out about my diagnosis in 2015, we were actually on a video shoot that day. And Spirit said to me, you're going to shoot this. So we ended up videotaping every aspect of my journey, my breast cancer journey. And I have created, I didn't edit it because I didn't really want to look at the footage, to be honest. I didn't want to take myself back to that time so much. But I really wanted it to be helpful to anyone who might be afraid of what that looked like and what they might have to go through. So at some point, we're going to release it as a sort of a uplifting documentary. And it's close to being finished. It's going to be music-driven because from the moment I found out about it, I started sitting down at the piano and singing affirmative songs and claiming my victory. And it's really full of a lot of spiritual tools and what I did and how I surrendered to the process and accepted it and mastered it, basically.
Do you think that gave you a little bit more strength doing that?
I don't know necessarily. I think it...
You think it was more faith-based?
It was totally faith-based, but I think I approached it... I have a philosophy that I heard from a Reverend Denise Schellenk that I love, which is what's before me is for me. I believe in all things work for the good. Mm-hmm. And in our philosophy, Unity, God is good and good is everywhere and good in everything. It's just really having the eyes to see it. And if we live, even as the Bible taught us, in joy, that is a statement of faith. Knowing that all is perfect in our world, no matter what it looks like, that's where the temptation comes to give power to something other than God. And that's really what happened for me, is that I just said, I'm going to embrace this walk. I'm going to embrace, you know, this is, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to walk my talk. I'm going to be in the moment. I'm going to be present. I'm going to give my life to God, and I'm going to experience all the joy I can through this journey. And it was amazing, some of the miracle things that happened, some of the people's lives. There was one moment in particular that was really special to me. I was in radiation, and I saw this woman in radiation every day who looked very sad and depressed. And I'm kind of a, I can be kind of a clown, and when people are a little down, I tend to want to lift their spirits. But she didn't seem to want to have anything to do with anyone. And she always had her head down, and she was sort of sitting in the corner, and she looked like she was struggling in life in general. And I started praying over her, just closing my eyes and saying some prayers, just affirming the truth of who she is and that I could see her as whole and healthy. And I don't know what I was doing with my hands, but probably something like this. And she looked up and said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm seeing your angels around you, and I'm talking to them. And she kind of got a puzzled look on her face. And I thought, oops, I hope I haven't offended her in any way. So I said goodbye and I walked out. And the next day when we went back to radiation, I hear this woman come barreling through the doors. She's like, where's Sherry? Where's Sherry? And she comes running in, and she had a rose in one hand and a little bag with some bath wash that she got from somewhere. And she was probably from, you know, East Los Angeles and didn't have anything. Here she had brought me a gift, and she hugged me like, you know, with such gratitude. And she said, you changed my life yesterday. You changed my life. And she was just weeping. We both started weeping. And she said, I thought I was going to die. Now I know I'm going to be okay. Wow. And it was just, and my husband, of course, has the camera right there, because he's like his little, he was just using his iPhone or whatever camera he had. And he interviewed her afterwards too. So there were just, you know, once, lots of wonderful moments like that, of just being present to what's going on and loving each other. through the process. Yeah. And what that did for me was amazing. What that did for me to know that that's really, that's who I am. That's what I want. I want to be that in every way that I can. Yeah. And when we can get out of, you know, the fear and the worry and the stress, and I mean, it's tough. It's not, I'm not denying. I mean, there were moments more a couple of years after. It almost felt like I was carried on wings during the difficult part. But then afterwards, the post-traumatic stress set in, and then I'd wake up in the middle of the night with, like, fear consuming me and sweats, and, like, I'd have to battle. I'd have to claim. I'd have to say, I am a divine child of God. I did not inherit disease. I am healed, whole, and healthy. And I would have to keep claiming my birthright. And fight that.
Thank you, Sherry. I really appreciate your time, and it means a lot when people can give a part of their day to me and my audience.
I'm so grateful. I appreciated it.
Thank you. If you are new to the channel, thank you for stopping by. I hope you'll subscribe and please come back. So we meet great people like Sherry, and they always have something special to share. And for those of you who are regular to the channel, thank you so much for your support. It's because of you that we do what we do. And so until the next one, everyone, please take care, be kind to one another, God bless, and peace.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Listen to the Vibes. You can catch us on Buzzsprout or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, and on YouTube. Follow us on Facebook at The Vibes Broadcast Network.